Welcome to Super Together. I'm James Cochran.
And I'm Ginger Rothis.
And today we're back in the studio,
yes.
Which is shorthand for my office. Ginger, you just came from the DMV.
Oh my gosh, yes. So my birthday is next week and my license was about to expire. And so I thought, somebody canceled today, a client, and I was like, ooh, I could run and get this done. And that is such an interesting experience being in the DMV. It's like an insight into all walks of humanity. Like we all have to go through this common.
The great equalizer, right?
The great equalizer. So in my wait for, I don't know, almost 2 hours there, I learned about somebody's severe IBS, an irritable bowel syndrome.
Wow.
I learned about a divorce happening with somebody's children. I learned about somebody's trip in January that's coming up, so they needed to make sure they had the real ID so they could travel. I mean, you just get a little bit of everything.
Sure.
And so I felt like I was doing some therapy and being reminded of, you know, all the things that humans are dealing with.
Yeah, that's it is an interesting slice of life.
It
now,
really is.
So you're in Missouri.
Right.
So in Kansas.
I was in Missouri. So I was in the Belton.
Yeah. In Kansas, like, you kind of like, you do, there's an online check-in. And so then you just, it'll like, you know, buzz you. And it's like, okay, it's about your turn. And then you go in and then you.
Oh, that's
cool. So you don't
have
to do a ton of waiting.
That's good. Yeah, we were all inside, you know, 6 feet apart, distanced. But
yeah.
2 hours of being in a room with a bunch of people.
Wow, that's rough.
I know. You gotta love Missouri sometimes.
Yeah.
We're a little behind.
Do you have to love Missouri sometimes?
No, you don't have to. I'm just kind of saying that for those that might be offended.
I lived in Missouri till I was 8, and then again when I was in college, and then for a year after college. Most of my life has been in Kansas, but I've spent, you know, I was born in Missouri and a lot of my life has been there.
It's amazing how across the state line it is very different.
It is a strange difference, but there are pockets of oddness on both
everywhere.
Sides of the state
absolutely.
Line.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we got a request this week to talk about social media and kind of in particular the way that social media shows up in the space of a coupled relationship and how it can come between people, the ways in which it might be valuable in facilitating those types of things. And I think I texted you about this last week and you didn't reply, which I interpreted to mean as like, oh, I don't know if I want to talk about that. And then I texted you again today while I was in the middle of getting a tattoo and just confirmed. I was like, hey, so you're good to talk about this, right? And you're like, sure.
Sure. Yes, that's about.
Not sure what I want to say is kind of how you're. So I'm curious.
I know.
Where that what stirs within you when
First
you
of
think
all,
about social media.
We've had the most interesting day that you were getting a tattoo and I was at the DMV and now we're recording a podcast.
Yeah.
But I think I didn't reply last week because I was thinking about it and then of course forgot. You're not the only one that didn't get a reply, so don't be offended ever when I don't reply. But I think that, you know, I was just kind of thinking, driving over here, too, about how does social media and privacy on our social media accounts in a relationship work? And I was thinking about two couples that I'm in conversation with right now. And social media has been an issue for them. One, there's some paranoia over the other person's accounts and who they're following and what conversations are going on in the direct messages. And then the other one feels, you know, like somebody shares too much on social media and that they should be more private. And so, I can see how this is a topic worth talking about in relationships. I think that... you know, it's a new frontier for privacy concerns in a relationship. It's kind of this new phenomenon of what are, you know, just like a partner might wonder, what's your work life like? Or what's that group of friends like that I'm not a part of? Mm-hmm. Now we have the social media platform of what are you doing on that I can't see? And who, you know, or what's happening that I don't know about?
Yeah, yeah. So I think what's interesting is... So you, I'm guessing with ballparks here, because you and Rob have been together 21 years?
Yes.
And so social media would have entered your relationship maybe about 5 years into your relationship, maybe in earnest closer to like 10 years or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't even remember when it did, but it certainly wasn't part of our dating life. Mm-hmm. It certainly wasn't part of our early married life.
Yeah. So Lindsay and I were in high school and kind of during Facebook becoming a thing. And it had maybe been a thing for a minute, and it sort of just became available to high school folks. It started mm-hmm. off as like just college people, mm-hmm. and then it was high school, and now it's just anybody. But Lindsay and I started talking using AOL Instant Messenger.
Wow.
Okay. So that was kind of like a sort of proto social media in that, like, uh-huh. you know, you had your away message, you had your, you
That's
know,
funny. I forgot about
little
that.
Comments. So there were elements of it there. But by and large, like, you know, it wasn't a space where like relationships were being cultivated or relationships were being, where there was this kind of concern about what's happening
exactly.
in these spaces. You know, I think that social media has this unique ability to be like one of the best things in the whole wide world and one of the worst mm-hmm. things in the whole wide world. And when I hear about it in relationships too, it's rarely that somebody comes in and say, you know, what's going really great in our lives is social media. It is just, it is helping us fire on all cylinders. We are connecting in all the right ways. It's almost always when social media comes up, it usually comes up in the guise of like, you know, there is this concern about who has access to what information, sort of what right to privacy exists. So I wonder if we zoom out for just a second and really ask the question about privacy mm-hmm. And ask the question like, how do we insist on, how do we imagine ourselves as being entitled to some amount of privacy in the space of a committed relationship? And it's probably one of those things that's going to have to do with an individual's personal values and the things mm-hmm. that they, you know, think, feel, and believe. But as we think about things like, you know, connection and intimacy and vulnerability, like, where do we see privacy as sort of blending in with that Venn diagram?
Wow. I think you're on it. And even zooming out to me, where I went with that was trust, mm-hmm. right? What's your level of trust? And then it kind of goes to what privacy is honored or merited. I think Rob and I think he would say this, that we have both taken an approach of, I will trust you until I have reason not to, mm-hmm. right? I think that both of us have tried to be not paranoid. You know, mm-hmm. I think that every once in a while a thought will go through one of our brains probably of like wondering, but is there something we're missing, or is it, you know, am I being naive? I think we both probably have those thoughts. But I really think our whole marriage has kind of been based on, I'll trust you until I can't, mm-hmm. and I'm not going to look for things. I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt and trust that I don't need to be watching everything you're doing.
Yeah.
So, you know, we follow each other, but I have never been in his account.
Like, him on Twitter?
I follow him on Twitter. I follow him on, he's not on Instagram. He's on Facebook.
What kind of things does Rob tweet? I'm curious.
Not much. he will forward some things. He'll forward funny things. He has tweeted about the meat industry.
Okay, sure. No, yeah.
Because he's in the food industry. The Flint Hills. He used to comment on my writing. I don't think that's happening anymore. So
we wear out our loved ones with our content production. Yeah.
He used to edit things for me. I don't even, that's fallen off. So, but basically I think he'll like things every once in a while. I'll be reminded that he's on social media by a like every once in a while, but it just has not been, maybe because it wasn't an integral mm-hmm. part of our youth, it sure. really isn't an integral part of our relationship.
Yeah. Ginger and I had probably one of the best discussions we've ever had, but we lost it because my computer fell asleep and I thought it was still recording, but it wasn't. But you were mentioning the idea that, you know, the way that you relate to Rob is informed by this idea of, we trust each other until we don't. And I was talking about how there are some people for whom that strategy would feel insufficient because of wounds that they've endured in the past, either in the specific relationship that they're a part of right now, where they're with somebody who has betrayed their trust in some way, or somebody in a past relationship that's betrayed their trust.
Yes.
And so in thinking about those folks and thinking about privacy, in thinking about privacy writ large, privacy in the space of social media, but also thinking about the ways in which social media might, you know, take up our time and potentially serve as a barrier to connection if we're, you know, sort of stuck in our phones or stuck on our computers or sort of engaging in spaces kind of outside of connection with our partners. I wanted to ask the question, are there spaces where our partners are not allowed? And I'll tell everybody, I already know the answer because I asked Ginger that question a moment ago. And your answer was a very quick yes, that yes, there are spaces where our partner is not allowed. And I agree, yes. But the roundness of that question is in the idea that for some people, this idea that we are entitled to private spaces apart from our partner feels like secrets. It feels like we are keeping things from them. And so I want us to spend some time fleshing that out. So yes, we're entitled to our private spaces. Go.
Yes. With the caveat of not doing harm to your partner in those private spaces, right? So I think the personal responsibility comes into this is a private space where I can be an individual, but is what I'm doing, mutually beneficial to us as a couple? I think the responsibility is not to do anything in that private space that would hurt your partner in any way, either publicly or in keeping a secret or in going down a path that isn't being faithful to your partner. I think the responsibility that comes with having spaces of your own is being responsible with not doing harm in those spaces.
Yeah. And I think what's tough is that I think I agree completely. And part of me was thinking about this idea of the therapy that I'm doing. So I'm doing therapy as an individual. My wife's doing therapy as an individual. And as we each explore those processes, we're doing that privately. And as much as there is we might have a subsequent conversation about that, my wife isn't invited to my therapy sessions.
Right.
You know, she is not allowed to sit in that space. And I think that that is partly because me being in the space with a therapist might give me different kinds of insights that I wouldn't be able to arrive at if my wife were present. Now, that doesn't mean that I want to hide those insights from my wife or not allow her to be a part of those, but that there is a different kind of human experience when we are separate from our relationship. So I think those are experiences that we can be certainly allowed to have and really should be encouraged to have. I think we've talked before about the Bowenian concept of differentiation and I am myself and you are yourself and we want to be together, but we also want to be separate. There's a balance that we want to strike in pursuing both of those things. And so we can enter into these private spaces, but we do so with intentionality and with care. And I think just to press the issue, to make the question, we're going to be asking questions and not offering answers, but what happens when one partner doesn't feel like they have the capacity to trust that their partner is going to be able to be inside these private spaces like social media and do so in a way that doesn't disrupt their connection in their relationship, that there's some lack of trust there. Mm-hmm. How do we approach that?
Yeah, well, it's certainly a conversation. It's certainly a expression of how you're feeling and how you are struggling to trust this person. And I think if the person indeed cannot be trusted, then there needs to be some owning up to that and probably not going into that private space. What boundaries do I need to behave well here? So maybe it's that my partner has my password and I have nothing to hide and you can check it anytime you want to. Or maybe it's I don't participate in social media at all. I think that we all kind of have have to know our cautionary zones, mm-hmm. right? Like where we become the person we don't want to be, or we do something we wish we weren't doing. I think we all know the cautionary lines for all of us. And I might even invite everybody to think about what are the three or four things that tend to get me in trouble, right? Mm. Is it that I need attention, or is it that I'm greedy, or that I like to flirt, or that I, you know, just knowing that about yourself helps. And then that creates kind of this cautionary zone where you can witness yourself going into that area that's mm-hmm. probably not good for you. It turns you into something you don't want to be. And so that's the conversation, I think, is fair in that either you've hurt me before, or you did this secret thing before, and this makes me very nervous mm-hmm. because I see the potential for it to happen again.
Right.
And that certainly the person is entitled to that conversation. And then I would hope the partner would also recognize, I see what you see. You're right. I don't want to do that. And sometimes I do feel tempted to do that. So here's what I will do to avoid it. I think those are very important conversations from a self-awareness and an awareness of your partner. Rob and I will leave our phones laying around, and I don't have a password on mine, and he has a password on his. And sometimes I'll joke, like, what do you have to hide? You know, mm-hmm. and we'll joke about these kinds of things. And I'll say, I don't have a password on mine. You can see, you know, I'm not hiding anything. And so it does kind of keep this banter alive. Like, hey, you know, I might check, and I do know his password. I probably shouldn't say this, but I've never gone into his social media accounts. I really haven't felt that I needed to. And maybe someday you'll play this back and say, oh man, that's where she missed the opportunity. Maybe I'm naive, but I think that I'm not my best self if I start getting paranoid and doing things like that.
Right.
And it betrays a trust, an energy of trust in our house that I want to maintain. Same thing with parenting. You know, I would love to go through my kids' phones often. Mm-hmm. And when they were first building relationships and when they first got phones, which we were a little late to the game from their peers, but I would check every once in a while, like, what's the tone of this conversation? Mm-hmm. What's happening here? Just to keep them safe.
Yeah.
But now as teenagers, I realize, you know, they're entitled to their privacy, and I want to be able to trust them, and I want them to live up to that trust. And again, at the risk of being naive, I do feel like humans are entitled to privacy, and we should respect that for one another.
Yeah. I think that the idea that we are entitled to privacy is part of what informs this conversation. And I think we're coming at it from the perspective of, you know, why are you entitled to privacy? You are entitled to privacy because there are some spaces where privacy is required to feel like you can be fully yourself, mm-hmm. to be fully authentic, to be fully comfortable. And then there are some spaces where privacy sets up the conditions to disrupt the stability of your relationship.
Yeah, that's right.
And the real challenge with social media is the ways that that overlaps, mm-hmm. is this kind of gray space in the middle where it's like, oh, wow, this is the exact right set of, you know, combination of factors that would allow me to create the conditions of an affair. Mm-hmm. And it's also like the exact right set of factors that allows me to, you know, explore my best self in the space of a private Facebook group with recovering alcoholics, right, or something like that,
right,
you know, where I can just, you know, vent about the things that are frustrating me and the development that I'm having as an individual in recovery. Like, both of those would be mm-hmm. important to have, but they're the same kinds of conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that where I see couples sometimes struggle with this, so after couples have had an affair, and that's why they've come to me, one of the things that and I really do this with all couples, but it is especially important with people who have gone through infidelity, is to come forward and say, you have to establish the conditions that will allow you to feel safe.
Good.
What is going to allow you to feel safely connected in your relationship? And for one partner, it's like, I have to know that like the contact with this other woman is not still happening. So what were the vehicles of contact and how can I have access to those so I can have that within my space of awareness? Yes. Now, whether that's traditionally fair under the values of right to privacy is questionable, but is in the space of that relationship, that's what that person is articulating as a need. So engage that in conversation and describe what is necessary. So for some couples, it's okay, fine. I just won't be on social media because I don't feel like I would want a space like that where I don't have that same right to privacy. Mm-hmm. So I'll just step out of that space, you know, mm-hmm. for the time being. Some people say, here's my password. And some people will continue to buck against that because of the value of privacy. Now, if your individual value around privacy is stronger than your commitment to the relationship, that's an answer sort of in and of itself. It's like, I value my privacy more than giving you what you need to be safe. I value my privacy more than making sure that we're establishing conditions that right. Will allow the relationship to be strong. You know, so whenever you're tempted to just say, well, you can't have my password because that's an invasion of my privacy. Mm-hmm. Like, try to go one step deeper and ask yourself, well, what is my privacy protecting in this space? Mm-hmm. Because it might be protecting something really valuable. It might be protecting your ability to engage with friends in a way that allows you to feel fully free and as an individual apart from your partner. Mm-hmm. It might be, you know, the conversations that you have with your therapist. It might be like your personal journaling that you do. Mm-hmm. You know, I have several journals, and one is kind of, it's more of just like, you know, thoughts that I mm-hmm. put on paper. It's not like a cohesive narrative or anything. And I was writing in it one time, and Lindsay looked over and like made a comment about what I was writing. And I kind of looked at her just kind of askance. I don't recall like saying anything or rebuking her in any way. But I was like, but she was like, oh my gosh, like I have just walked into a private space. Mm-hmm. And I don't, again, it wasn't, right. it wasn't anything high stakes, but like right. she recognized like, oh, like this space, yeah. it matters to you that it's private.
Yeah.
And ultimately that I think is the conversation we want to be having with ourselves mm-hmm. is when we mark a space as private, I think that for it to be able to stand the sort of test of a relationship, there has to be something more than just I value privacy.
Yeah.
It's this is what this private space is allowing me mm-hmm. to do, cultivate. Here's why it's important to mm-hmm. me. Now, I don't know if you're a lawyer for the ACLU and like you are just like privacy is your 100% number one thing forever and always. You're probably not somebody who would, mm-hmm. you know, want to share your passwords. Totally fine. This all is going to boil down to what do you feel like you're able to do as an individual? But because we're talking about two different lives sort of blending into one life together, I think that the question is, how are you allowing your private spaces to be good for you and bad for your relationship? And ideally, you want to minimize the bad for your relationship stuff and maximize the good for you stuff inside those private spaces. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, thinking about it as like there's three units in this relationship. Mm-hmm. There's you, me, and us together.
Sure.
And how do we keep all of those thriving? And the us together is important to go back to what you were saying about what would it take for you to feel safe? Mm-hmm. What would it take for you to trust me? What would it, and that's an important conversation to have as far as acknowledging how the other person feels in the relationship and how, you know, I think about sometimes our behaviors may contribute to an air of secrecy that mm-hmm. we don't even intend, you know, but if I never leave my cell phone on the counter, you know, my husband could deduce, well, she never leaves her cell phone on the counter. I wonder if she's hiding something mm-hmm. and I'm just having it in my pocket all the time. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think we have to have these conversations because we're quick to assume our brains are just always afraid. You know, oftentimes our brains are going to a warning. A security system is going off in our mm-hmm. brains that somebody's going to hurt us, leave us, reject us. I'm not lovable. I'm stupid. You know, mm-hmm. all those internal things that we tell ourselves. And so we're sort of looking for evidence for that on a daily basis. It's that confirmation bias that I think we've talked about before. And so our partner may be feeling paranoid by something we're doing, and we don't even realize we're doing it because they don't want to lose us and they're afraid of rejection. So I think that's why it's important to not make the assumption that there is a secret going on based on, you know, something that the person may not be aware of, but also have the conversation. I feel like you're hiding something, and I want to have this conversation, because we've both talked in our intuition episode that sometimes when we get that intuitive hit, we need to listen to it. Mm-hmm. And there is a reason that we're feeling a fear. So I think it goes back to, yes, we are still individuals, but we came together and we made a deal that we were a partnership. And part of the covenant of that partnership, whatever form it may take, is that we respect one another, but we also communicate if one of us is feeling unsafe.
Yeah. Yeah. And that blending that you're describing, I think to me is really what's at the bottom of most of this, saying, hey, here's what I need. Here's what you need. If you need more privacy than I feel comfortable in giving you, what is it sort of at the bottom of that? Yeah. Which one of us might be asking for too much, either in I'm asking for too much privacy or you're asking for too much of my privacy? And you find a space often in the middle that reflects your intentionality to allow the relationship to grow and thrive, but also your insistence that, yeah, there are some spaces that I really do need to be able to be my best self. Yeah. You know, maybe we could spend like a minute, because we're about out of time, talking about, you know, like the value of social media or the lack of value of social media. Like, honestly, I don't like much of social media. I don't know. I can think of like a couple of times when it's been valuable. Yeah. So my wife has, when she was, I think in middle school, her family had a foreign exchange student from Germany that came to live with them. And like Facebook has been great in terms of facilitating reconnection. Like we went to Vienna about a year and a half ago, and then we met up with her foreign exchange student in Prague, and Facebook allowed for that to happen. Could it have happened beyond that? Maybe. It would have been obviously a lot more difficult. It might have been so difficult that we might not have pursued it, but with Facebook, it was all very easy. So like, I'm sure there are a million different ways like that. There are spaces of community on Facebook. There are ways for people to leverage, you know, social change, and there's all kinds of ways that it does that well. But mostly Facebook is just a dumpster fire of stuff. And I loved last week you were talking about your new community and how you intentionally kept it off of social media as a way. And I don't think that that was a judgment on social media as much as a recognition that for some people, social media is really disruptive.
Yes.
And I tend to agree with that.
Yeah.
And honestly, if I didn't feel like having a business in the 21st century requires some level of social media presence, I probably would not have much social media. I didn't have much social media presence prior to launching my private practice. So I'm wondering where we see social media as having value in our lives generally, and thinking about that as we sort of decide how important it's going to be.
I think the benefit I'm seeing right now is for myself learning of resources and classes and things that I can explore. Because of social media, I learn about these things. And for my people who take my classes and clients, many of them wouldn't know about things if I didn't publish it. And I've had some stories of, oh my gosh, I was feeling lost and then I saw that you were offering this thing and I did it and I feel better. And so that makes me continue to post things. That is my motivation of, you put it out in the world and it gets shared or forwarded or screenshotted and you don't even know where it's going, but maybe it's a lifeline to somebody.
Right.
So I think in both of our work, that to me is the importance of social media. You know, it's Suicide Prevention Month, and awareness has been heightened. And a lot of the accounts that I follow on Instagram, I've noticed, are mental health accounts. And it's you know, I'm watching all of these posts and conversations happening to normalize feelings of hopelessness and normalize feelings of despair, but also encouraging people that it's temporary and, you know, and to seek help and to speak up and to ask people how they're doing. I'm watching all of this as I scroll through thinking this is really the good of social media.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, people finding resources, finding feeling less alone.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see the good in that, but I also see how it can mentally cause us pain,
mm-hmm.
right? It can cause a tremendous amount of mental suffering as well. So I think everyone's just got, it has to be aware of their own threshold of tolerance for it and do what feeds you and helps you, not what's harmful to you or upsets you.
Yeah. Agreed times eight, which I don't know. That feels
that
like
was
a good,
longer than a minute.
That feels like a good multiplier. No, that was great. So social media, have conversations, ask questions, you know, identify what's important to you. We said all this stuff, I think. If you have further questions about social media, this may be one that we revisit. You know, I think we talked about politics before, but we should talk about like the ways that we engage in like civic spaces,
yeah.
you know, as sort of a way to tie in maybe some of the mm-hmm. racial justice stuff we did over the summer
yes.
in conjunction with politics.
That would be good.
But social media plays into that obviously in a big way.
Or when you disagree with what your partner posts.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, I know some couples that they're posting very different things
mm-hmm.
and I follow both of them. And I think, oh, what are conversations at dinner like in that household?
Yeah.
So
Well, and I think about family and all, you know, beyond just intimate partners, you know, like siblings and cousins and parents and all that.
Exactly.
So we'll definitely circle back to this, a little bit down the road. So if, I'm like blanking on how we end our podcast. We talk about ourselves for a minute. Yeah.
So to find more from Ginger, you can go, or from me, I'm saying it in third person again, to find more on my work, you can go to compassionfix.com.
And where's the course?
And there's a couple of things going on. I have a new Psalms course launching. So if you go to CompassionFix.com classes, you'll see that offering. I also have the Compassion Fix community, which we're about a month and a half into, and that's been super fun. It's a new topic every month, so join it anytime. And you can find out about that at CompassionFix.com too.
Okay, cool. And I'm James. You can find out about my practice at TalkingWithJames.com. And the couples course that I'm launching is at convergecourses.com. I think there's also stuff on my website. I don't know how everything's organized at the moment. My life just feels like chaos, but I think that'll do it. We'll be back next Friday, and until that time,
be well.